For that kind introduction, and especially for the appeal of prayers, because I never stand behind the sacred desk, but what I feel keenly, the need to be able to have the Spirit of God to be with me. I don't think any of us were born to be preachers, but maybe we weren't even born to be saints of God in that sense, but there's a time in which we live this life out that gives us an opportunity to make a choice. And that choice can very well direct us to become saints of God, become ministers for the Savior, to be servants of the Lord. And this is a marvelous thing. I have a thought that has been, well, I've got a number of thoughts been roaming around my mind this past week or so, trying to put something together, but there's one thought that I would like to present to you. I'm going to ask it in a question. What is the Church of Christ worth? What is the value of this church? Well, of course, we think of tangible values. We're not incorporated, or we're not a corporation as such. So we probably aren't worth a whole lot as far as the world is concerned to maybe this piece of property, and it might be worth quite a bit. But what I'm really talking about is the Church of Christ as an organization. Maybe I ought to put it a little more plainly, as the bride of Christ. What is its value? Well, there isn't anything that equals what was paid for the bride of Christ. The blood of Christ, is what paid for that. So there's your value if you want to put a value on it, and there's no way to figure it. I mean, all the corporations in the world, all the nations of the world do not equal that value. There's no amount of gold, silver, anything else that you can put there to say that would equal what Jesus Christ gave for the children of men. And of course, you can kind of generalize this, but I was thinking, you know, with this being election year, you know, we might want to think in terms of value, or you might say political clout. What might we as a minority group be influential to the politicians? Well, we're so small, we're not even I don't think we could be counted as a minority group even. Unless, of course, we generalize and we say that we are Christian. And we can say, well, the Christians all group together and band together and put a little pressure on the politics of this country and generally of the world, but particularly this country. We might carry a little bit of weight there. But, you know, the Christians are getting a bad rap. What we've called basically Christian teachings and beliefs, the old fundamental beliefs, they're not liked anymore. You find this. I was kind of reading some column or something somewhere the other day, and this guy was answering by using the Bible making an his views, and the answer came back, it says, get rid of that Bible. We don't want it. just like that. And it just more or less shamed him for even using it. You know, that attitude kind of riled me out of my chair for a little bit. I said, wait a minute. You know, you're getting close to a situation here that we've been thinking about for a long time, and we haven't really really been noticing it. But you know, when they reject Jesus Christ, and this nation becomes controlled by the Antichrist element, you know, we're in real deep trouble fast as far as the world, as far as the nation is concerned. Now, hopefully the Church of Christ won't be that way. In fact, I believe that the Lord is setting bringing about things in which it will be of great consequence. So, I've been thinking in that sense of what is the church worth? I think of this because every once in a while I'll run across somebody that I've seen in the past or I've known, and they have become acquainted with the church and they walked off, left it. And I've even run across some that have been members of this church and have left it. Well, the church didn't turn out to be what they wanted. And you know, the thing that bothers me is that, you know, I know this is closer to home than I really want to accept, but the truth is I've had a problem, and I've run into it in other people where the desire is that we make the church fit us individually. The church has got to come up to what I want it to be in order for me to stay here, is the kind of attitude. You know, I'm 65 years old. I'm getting up in years, and there's some things that's come slapped right up in my face all of a sudden that make me realize that my judgment of the church is so poor that I don't have a right to really pick at anything and try to say, Lord, this church has got to fit me. No, I can't do that. It doesn't, you know, I believe very strongly in having a conviction of the gospel of Christ and having a testimony that this is the true church of Christ. I'm very strong on that. But some of the particulars that a person can get hung up on is sometimes a very difficult thing. And that's where we've been. Throughout the time that I've been a member of this church, I have seen, and there's been a little bit of a change here and there, but there has been the debate and the argument of who's right and what is right. And, of course, with all of that comes suspicion and distrust between individuals, and there has been problems that I don't even want to go into at this time, but they are a part of the background that I have had in the church. And so I feel that with this background, I have an advantage in understanding some of the things. But while the church has been in its kind of internal stir and problem solving situations, our young people have grown up and some of them have gone. Some of them have got involved in things that are wrong. And we've lost a number of our members who potentially could have been good, strong members in the church. Now, that is a sad thing. But, you know, that's happened probably in a lot of churches, but it shouldn't be happening here in the Church of Christ. So what must we do to refocus and get our attention upon the things that should be priorities in our lives. Well, I try to preach on the prophecies that point to our time, and I know I've kind of overdone that. But you know, there's just things just like what I was telling you a while ago about this individual who wrote in this column and what they had to say. Every once in a while, I get this startling reality that something is going on here in the world that really needs our attention. And I'm going to put it in my own language. The powers that be in the world, in this nation, and probably worldwide, they're plowing the field a new way. They're setting a new standard, or trying to set a new standard of morality. And some you might call it the New Age influence. I don't know exactly what it all is, but I get an indication of this every once in a while, and I think you know what I'm talking about. There is the Antichrist, those who believe and promote evolution in the play and oppose the creation story. And all that kind of thing, and it concerns me that we are not meeting these things adequately. Of course, we're so small, we probably can't. But what I'm talking about is adequately within our own people, within our own church. Hopefully, our children are being exposed enough to the true principles of the gospel of Christ, to the fundamental teachings contained in the scriptures and the word of God, that they are prepared and able to give an answer to the world and to stand firm against those teachings that are contrary. Now, I'm talking about the general influences that are out there. But actually, what is taking place is deception that would totally overcome us in our beliefs, but in our very lives. They are a threat to us. Our whole economical system is based upon a trade and commerce that goes worldwide. And it's controlled. It is a controlled thing. And I don't want to arouse us in great fear, but I think the Lord has already spoken to us about these things. And I'm going to go over here to the book of Luke. I think I better get into the scriptures here. And I'm going to read a scripture that has always been outstanding to me. And I know that you've heard it, and possibly some of you have preached on it frequently as I have. It's in the 21st chapter of Luke, starting with verse 34. And I want us to picture what's going on here. First of all, Jesus is talking to his disciples. And they are asking him questions. And they are asking concerning his return and the latter days. And he has warned them adequately about certain things concerning the deception. And we know that there is a great deception in the world today. And that's what I was talking about, the framework of trying to rebuild or restructure the moral standard in this country. But what they're doing is that they take God out of it, they take the scriptures out of it, and they have nothing but a brand new area there that they can construct whatever they want to. And so they include a lot of pernicious activities and so forth that's morally wrong. But in this reading here, in these words that Christ gave, he is warning his disciples. It says, "And take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and cares of this life, and so that day come upon you unawares. He's speaking of the time that Christ will return, the day of the Lord. For as a snare shall it come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch ye therefore and pray always that ye may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. Now the thing that that we have personally to deal with is what he's talking about here. And I believe that these words were not just spoken to the disciples for their benefit, but it was actually spoken prophetically to us, to for us to take heed that our hearts not be overcharged with surfeiting, or in other words, excesses of things. And there are many things that we do excessively and perhaps unthinkingly. And when it speaks of drunkenness, I realize that that very well could apply to alcohol and becoming drunk that way. But I believe also it is it's being over obsessed with things of this world, things that are not of value to your soul salvation, and so that you are actually in a unresponsive state, a state where you're not going to respond to the Spirit of God or to anything that would really bring you bring your attention back to the reality of your life and your needs. And it says that the cares of this life, that you would be overcharged with your, you know, with the cares of this life. And I know that there's a lot of stress in jobs, stress that actually kind of, it really takes a person to a point of testing their ability to be able to deal with it. It's too great a stress. And it says that day would come upon us unawares. We would not be prepared for the things that we are to meet. And my brothers and sisters, I believe that that's what I'm, you know, that's the main thought here, that and the main concern that we should have, that we are not prepared for that which is to come. And as I go on, I think I can point this out. But it says, for as a snare shall it come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth. That isn't just a few, is it? The whole earth. Well, what's going on out in the world? What's going on between nations and nations? They're becoming more and more involved and dependent upon each other. And they're connected by commerce, by finances. And this nation itself is controlled by what's going on. Hey, you see our gas prices go way up and then back down again and then it's up again and back and forth. And, you know, we don't know where we're going to be on some of our expenses. Well, it don't take a whole lot to figure out. If the price of gasoline goes up to, you know, extremely high and stays there, everything else is going to go up. So inflation is out of sight. Our incomes have shrunk as far as buying power is concerned. And so there is we could be concerned about that primarily, but that is the snare. The snare is this thing right here. That's the snare. And you know what? We're all in it. We're in the snare. You can't live without this. Not here in the United States. You have to have money. And that's our snare. We're in the snare already. The only thing is, and pay attention to this, what he says here, that for as a snare it shall come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth. The monetary powers that be is that which will control us. Now, I'm talking physically here. Watch ye therefore and pray always that ye may be accounted worthy to escape all these things. We're in the snare. We've got to pray and watch that we escape the snare. That's where we're at right now. We're in the snare. We've got to escape it. And that doesn't mean that we go out here in some remote area and into a cave or something like that and escape it. It's going to be by the power of God that it's going to happen. And he says, watch and pray. And it says also that ye be accounted worthy to escape. Worthy. That's a pretty powerful word. In other words, our moral, our righteousness, our whole structure is very important. And that's what I want to talk about is also is the structure of morality that is necessary for us to escape these things. And it has to be our conscience that makes it possible. How do you develop a conscience that says, I will not sin, but I will do that which is right? How do you do that? You all got a Bible. You got a Book of Mormon. You got Latter-day Revelations. You have the Word of God to tell you what you are to do and what you're not to do. That is the foundation of your conscience, so that you know good from evil, and so that you guide your life. And this is the thing that's very important to me. It's the influence that we have upon each other within the church. Now, I know that the world's out there and we can't control the world. And you're going to bump into this when you're out there working. You're going to bump into all kinds of things. And you're going to see some of it on your TV. You're going to read it in your papers. You're going to find of many things that influence you to do what is wrong. But I'm talking about what we do here as individuals that has a bearing upon the things that are right. For instance, I will just use that myself as an example here. If I do something that is good, and somebody else sees it, and they say, "Well, that is good. I want to be like that. I want to do that too." But if I do something that is wrong, if I commit a gross sin of some type, I have that same influence. People see it and they are influenced by it. Within the Church of Christ, we are as a network of emotions, of feelings, of desires, of inspirations. We all have these things that tie us together. And you know yourself that when somebody that you love very much does something wrong, you hurt for that person. You want to help that person correct themselves. And it's so easy to say, well, I don't want to hurt their feelings, so I'm not going to say anything. Well, is that really the right thing to do? If you're close to that person, they should be able to listen to you and hear what you have to say. It may make a terrific difference. Hopefully it will. But the same is true. If I'm doing something wrong and I'm out here struggling by myself, and quite often I am, because I don't really want anybody to know what my thoughts are or my private thoughts or my desires at certain times. But I really need the help and the strength of my brothers and sisters in Christ. And so when I say these things, I'm saying it from the standpoint that I'm hoping that we, as a people, learn to be a little bit more involved with each other. We keep saying, well, no, we don't want to do that. We keep separating ourselves. We keep pushing others away. And some people have actually pushed the church away or, you know, isolated themselves from the church deliberately. Sometimes we've lost them as a result. But there is a need for us to let our personal feelings be known unto others, our good feelings. No, we're not evil all the time. We can trust each other. We can really communicate and become involved with others without meddling into their affairs if we try. But it's hard to do because a lot of people become offended as soon as you say something to them. It's however you do it, of course. But there is something that's important here. And I think that the Christian way, the way that Christ would have us to do, is to be ready to answer and respond to any good effort that is made toward us. To be quick to accept a good advice. Be quick to accept a good deed. Be quick to accept an offer of something, even if you don't really need it, but to be quick to accept the feelings and the desires of other people. I think we can grow in that direction to be a more of a Christian people. And so it is a very real thing in the Church of Christ that we are in a network of feelings, of desires, of hopes, of inspirations. We are in a network of that. We are in a network of trust, trusting each other, being able to say, well, I know that so-and-so will do such and such, and be able to respond to that. Now I want to take us in another direction here a little bit. You know, when Jesus was talking to his disciples, we can go back into Matthew 24, which is the same occasion. He said on Matthew 24:9, he says, "Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations." You'll be hated of all nations for my name's sake. Now, it's not because of what the person has done, because but for Christ's sake. In other words, what we're seeing happening right now on this land, a rejection of Christian truths and principles. Our upholding those things are going to be met with opposition. I can't remember who I was talking to. It was somebody I was talking to it doesn't matter. One young lady was talking in a class about an individual that she works with is an atheist, or she didn't claim to be an atheist, but she in a sense, she didn't believe in most of the things. And, this was very upsetting to the young lady. And so, it is upsetting, and we should realize, and it should be upsetting to us. I mean, I felt immediately akin to how she felt. Because when you meet this, it isn't just a rebuff on your what you like and on your own personal feelings, but it is a it is generally felt to be a reaction against Christ. And this should hurt. This should offend us. We should react. We should be sensitive to anything that opposes Christianity, that opposes the doctrine of Christ. We should be sensitive to these things. And so we have to understand that those who went out to preach, the various apostles that went out to preach that Christ had commissioned, they met with all types of opposition, and some of them were crucified even as Christ was. And many were killed. And so he says that in another place, he says these things were done for his name's sake. And he's speaking of the world. He says that it shall turn to you for a testimony. It shall turn to you for a testimony. They want, the world wants to hear you say it. It wants to hear me say it. And yes, we will be judged for it. Yes, we may be killed for it. But the world wants us to say it. It's necessary to be said, because there are those who are going to be influenced by your conviction, not your ability to kind of sidestep the thing and get out of the center of the attention there. That's what's facing us. We don't know persecution today, really. But I dare say that we are standing at the time of the mark of the beast, because everything is shaping up in that direction. A worldwide government that's going to be looking at us, and if we don't have the mark in our hand or in our forehead, we can't go to the store down here, and this dollar bill I showed you wouldn't be worth anything. Now that's the thing we're going to have to face, isn't it? That's the thing that we need to be preparing for. And this is what Christ has warned us about. But you know, he goes on to say, "For I will give," this is Luke 21:15. "For I will give you a mouth and wisdom which all your adversaries shall not be able to gainsay or resist." He says not to meditate what you're going to answer. When they put you on the spot, you know, trust in the Lord. Because no matter what you say, otherwise, it's not going to help you. But when you are able to answer the truth, give the truth in answer to them, they will not be able to gainsay or resist. No, it won't be according to what they think, the way they reason, if indeed there is such a time that we are going to meet this. But I'm assured that we are going to meet certain persecution. And he said also, Matthew 5:10, "Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." For righteousness' sake. Persecuted for righteousness' sake. You know, I don't know why I'm inclined to dwell on this, or why I went this direction. Excuse me. But I do know, because we don't seem to be concerned too much about being persecuted. Well, we did have one individual come in here and try to whip some guys one time, but he didn't get very far with that. But that isn't the kind of persecution that I think we're going to meet. Now, we are told in Amos 5:14-15, "To seek good and not evil, that ye may live, and so the Lord, the God of hosts, shall be with you as you have spoken. As hate the evil and love the good, and establish judgment in the gate. It may be that the Lord God of hosts will be gracious unto the remnant of Joseph." Hate anything, and you know, we're going to be peaceful for the sake of peace. And that is a trap. That is a trap. Because it's not going to work. There's no such a thing. You know, back when communism was a real threat, and it still may be as far as I know, but when it was a real threat back in my younger days, they said they would, the communists would take a peaceful gun and shoot you peacefully. You know, that was their way of handling the peace situation. And they could never negotiate peace with the communists. But now they think they can. I don't know. But the disposition that we are to have is to hate evil. We abhor it. We should not, when we see things that are wrong, we should abhor it. And there's a whole lot of things out there we see that are wrong. And that we should be quick to make establish judgment in the gate. That is, determine right at the beginning of it that is wrong. So we have to give an answer, and we have to give it quickly. Now, if we have a problem with understanding what is good and evil, somewhere along the way we haven't read our scriptures. That's the main thing. Because our scriptures tell us what is good and what is evil. And if you need a little bit more help, it says here that the Spirit of Christ is given to every man that he may know good from evil. And also you can obtain, the Book of Mormon tells us, through prayer unto God, the knowledge of all things that are good. It says also that ye that love God, hate evil. It's just that simple. Can't get any more abbreviated or more condensed on a thought than that. But that gets it right to the point. And that's what I marvel about the scriptures. You know, I might talk all day on something and not get too close to the real point of the matter, but you can take and turn to one scripture and it's there and it's said all of a sudden. In the Jeremiah, the 6th chapter, I have found some good scriptures here. Something that probably we should be given attention to. And Jeremiah 6:10, it says, "To whom shall I speak?" And this is the prophet. "And give warning that they may hear. Behold, their ear is uncircumcised. They cannot hearken. Behold, the word of the Lord is unto them a reproach. They have no delight in it." I couldn't get any closer to a description of what's going on in, you know, the general attitude of a lot of people in the world today is exactly that. The word of the Lord unto them is a reproach. They do not delight in it. Now, the opposite is that the word of the Lord unto us is a delight, is a thing that we rejoice in. And we do delight in it. Jeremiah 6:14, I'll skip down there. They have, speaking of those that of the people of at that time, they have healed also the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly. That's the younger generation, saying, "Peace, peace," when there is no peace. And I think that exact thing is happening today in the world. We hear so much about peace and things done for the sake of peace. "Were they ashamed," going on, "were they ashamed when they committed abomination?" Were they ashamed? "Nay, they were not at all ashamed, neither could they blush. Therefore they shall fall among them that fall at the time that I visit them. They shall be cast down, saith the Lord." So there is a condition, a hardened condition, a condition that the power of deception is working at today, and that is to sear your conscience, and to cause one to in, be unaffected by the truth of the gospel of Christ. They would only react as if they are being reproached when the truth is spoken to them. It says, "Thus saith the Lord," verse 16, "Stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths wherein is the good way, where is the good way, and walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls." But they said, "We will not." Their reaction was, "We will not do that." Now that is the situation that we're faced with today. Many people will not accept what we have to say. And they will not walk in those paths, the old paths. Tradition to people today is offensive. You talk about the things that the moral standard that I remember as a young person, and the way of life, the attitude, and so forth. To speak of those things is like throwing gasoline into a fire. People do not like that. They are rejecting the things that were of our generation, and we saw that happen in the 1970s and 80s as the young people were rejecting the ways of the older generation, and many things that I consider rather a standard way of life has been labeled as the cause of all of our problems. Our traditional beliefs and so forth have been labeled as a cause of all our problems. But as I said before, the problem is that the powers that be today that want to influence the great numbers of the people are trying very desperately to establish a new standard, and they want to wipe everything clean, including the existence of God. They want to clean that off, and they think, well, getting rid of that, then we can establish a new religion. Well, what guide are they using? Just their old noggin up here. What sounds good to them? Well, can you trust in that? Can our young people trust in people who think they know what's right when they don't use Christian morals to guide them? Yes, we're faced with a dilemma in this country. But the prophecies indicate that they're going to that direction, and they're going to reject Christ. And they have rejected Him to a large extent. So it's not a surprise, or it shouldn't be a surprise to us. Yet at the same time, we must realize that we have to prepare. We have to be the light. The Lord has called us out to occupy center stage here in carrying forth this gospel. So many churches have went this way and that way and have fallen away into disarray and have been split up into small fragments. And they were before, you might say, a companion to us in the carrying forth of Christian principles. And of course, there are many, many yet who are fundamentalists as far as individuals are concerned in the Christian community. But it is our duty. And so when I speak of the value of this church, I speak of the great potential that it holds. And not necessarily a potential, but a commission that Christ Himself has given to this church. We are to be the light. We are to be the salt of the earth. And that doesn't seem even possible in my general of comprehension of things, but I know that he has not commissioned us to do anything that we cannot do. If it is his desire, it will be accomplished. So every moral, every standard, and every principle of truth that we obtain from the gospel of Christ is of value to not just us, but to the whole world. And we've got to realize that. We've got to realize that our commission goes beyond our own people. And so it is by, it comes back to us as individuals that we have to structure our conscience, discipline, and control our very minds, our hearts, and our wills to conform with the will of God. And that structure of righteousness that exists in each one of us, in our minds, in our hearts, will produce that which will be effective between ourselves as well as throughout the world, wherever we come in contact with people. In 1 Timothy 1:5, Paul says, "Now the end of the commandment is charity out of a pure heart and of a good conscience and of faith unfeigned, from which some have swerved, have turned aside unto vain jangling, desiring to be teachers of the law, understanding neither what they say nor whereof they affirm." And so we see that exactly if that has happened, the vain jangling and so forth has happened. But we go back to that pure heart and good conscience. That is what is our need as individuals. We are told that we are to purge our conscience from dead works to serve the living God. Now, there is another aspect to this, considering that we may very well undergo persecution and tribulation. And Peter says this, he says, "When you are buffeted for your faults," what glory is that? This is in 1 Peter 2nd chapter 20th verse. "Ye shall take it patiently." Let me read that again. "For what glory is it, if when ye be buffeted for your faults, ye shall take it patiently? But if when ye do well and suffer for it, ye take it patiently, this is acceptable of God." You know, that kind of really startled me when I read that. It's so true. Yes, we may be undergoing physical problems, or various of the trials that you might say we are being buffeted or tried, that we might respond to the Lord or correct ourselves, in other words, bring about a true correction in ourselves. The Lord works with us. I mean, I think we all have testimonies where the Lord works with us, and he tells us what is right and what is wrong, and he tries us to get us to correct our lives. But that is not the big reward, is it? That's just getting us in line, getting us straightened out, taking care of us. What does he want? He wants something more. He says, "If you do well," when you do well and suffer for it, "this is acceptable unto God." Did he undergo trials to be corrected by the Father? No, he was perfect. Everything he did was right. And yet he suffered death at the hands of those who would take his life, who hated him. He did well, and he suffered it patiently. So that's what he wants from us. Step up to the plate and take the responsibility that you have. Do well. He also said in 1 Peter 3:17, "For it is better if the will of God be so that you suffer for well-doing than for evil-doing." Yes, I wonder how many times I suffer for my wrongs, and that's just the end of it. You know, we've got the attitude, and the world's this way. You know, I'll just do what I have to do. And you've probably heard people say, well, I'll just do what I have to do to get my good reward in the hereafter. You may miss completely. You've got to do beyond what you have to do to accomplish it. You have to be willing to serve fully, completely. It is said that Christ said that, "Except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven." That's something above and beyond the norm. That which is what we consider just getting along with each other and being kind and considerate of each other and so forth. That's good and needful. But that's just only going so far. That is not going the whole distance. The whole distance is being like Christ. We have to be distinguished for our righteousness. You know, the truth is that which will help us all. And the truth is offensive to those that don't obey the truth. Sometimes we're easily offended. And we don't like it when somebody comes along and tells us something. Sometimes we just stay bad for a while. Let's be careful about that. Because if somebody tells me the truth about myself, and I just blow up, that's a sign. Roland, get it right. You are not going, if you are upset with that, when it may be just a very minor thing, how can you possibly undergo any real trial or meet any type of persecution? How can you possibly do it? We have the assurance in Psalms 91, 1 through 4. "He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress. My God, in Him will I trust. Surely He shall deliver me from the snare of the fowler." And this is what our hope is, that we are delivered from this snare. "And from the noisome pestilence. He shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust." Now comes the real part. All this, you know, we would accept gladly. Lord, cover me with your feathers. Protect me from all these things. The latter part of that verse says, "His truth shall be thy shield and buckler." You know, I can just almost see the difference as it swings around here, and suddenly I'm faced with the necessity of speaking the truth and living the truth and depending on the truth, putting myself out beyond what I normally would do to defend that which is true. It says, buy the truth and sell it not. We can see that the truth is worth a great deal. It says that the truth is as the is that which Christ has spoken, and is described in Isaiah as being the rod out of his mouth, and that with that rod he shall. He says, but with righteousness shall he judge the poor and reprove with equity for the meek of the earth. He shall smite the earth, and with the rod of his mouth and the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked. And that really means that it's going to overpower them. Now, we have to be in a condition where we will not be overpowered by the truth. We have to be in a condition that we rejoice in the truth. In 2 Nephi, first chapter, verse 76 through 79, page 83, it says, wherefore he is the first fruits unto God, speaking of Christ, inasmuch as he shall make intercession for all the children of men. And they that believe in him shall be saved. And because of the intercession for all men come unto God. Wherefore, they stand in the presence of him to be judged of him according to the truth and holiness which is in him. Remember that last phrase. According to the truth. He's going to judge according to the truth and holiness which is in him. Are you glad to be a Christian? Do you want to be like Christ? That has to be your desire. We are at the crossroads. We are in the valley of decision right now, deciding which way we're going, whether we accept and become as Christ or whether we find something of the world that attracts us and draws us to it. So I say, yes, the church is of great value. Its value is beyond anything that we can estimate because it has a direct connection and is the conveyor of taking saving souls and preserving them in eternal bliss with Christ. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Surratt. Dinner will be served at 5 p.m. this evening. There will be a song service from 6:30 to 7 p.m. And then at 7 p.m., the preaching service will be by Apostle Donald McIndoe. So I invite each one of you to stay, enjoy the fellowship, enjoy the food, enjoy the Spirit of God. Number 161. Thank you. Let's bow our heads.